friends. Welcome back to the So OCD podcast. I'm Wendy Nunnery, your So OCD host, and man, has it been a while. It was harder than I thought getting back to a new batch of episodes last June because I was getting ready to release my new book, Good Enough, into the world, and that came out in October. It was an all-in, year-long, time-consuming project, and I loved it. I'm so proud of that story and the redemption in it. But in between that, getting my book on the shelves, raising two children, you know how it goes. It was an incredible experience, though, getting to walk into Barnes & Noble and see my book there on the shelves, among my favorite authors. But then the election here in the U.S. was bonkers, and we had the holidays. And well, 2020 was a year for everyone. But here I am, back at it with a brand new episode, and I don't know if you've noticed, but a brand new look and sound as well. I figured that as we celebrate So OCD's second birthday and 30,000 downloads, whoa, that it was time to freshen up a bit. Thank you for your continued support of this podcast. Something that began as a side project for me that has turned out to be a pretty incredible resource for a lot of people and has introduced me to some really great friends as well. I love you guys. Okay, today we're going to pretty quickly wrap up our two-part series, very late, on the subtypes of OCD. In our first part, I talked about three common subtypes, including contamination, symmetry and order, and harm. So if you're looking for that information, just go back and check out episode 11. Today, we're gonna chat about three other very common subtypes, religious, sexual, and relational. Okay, let's get started. Religious OCD is common among sufferers who grew up in extremely religious households, although it's not just limited to those people. I've told my story here, which you can go back and listen to in episode 2, and I was raised in a small southern conservative town where everyone knew everyone else. I loved growing up there. I was loved so deeply, and I felt that. But I also knew that the rules of my particular faith tradition, something like Southern Baptist adjacent, were non-negotiable. There was this constant battle between my heart knowing and feeling love from my family and God, and the fear that I could and would lose it all if I didn't perform well. This has led to religious obsessions at varying points in my life where I would struggle with feeling like I wasn't talking to God enough or saying the right words when I prayed. Mostly for me, it has come in the form of an obsessive need to always know the correct or moral choice. My counselor recently said to me that I was born with the OCD gun locked and loaded in my brain, meaning that my tendency to experience an anxiety disorder is genetic. But it was the environment and experiences I had growing up that pulled the trigger for OCD to manifest in my life. This metaphor has really helped me see that while my brain attempts to obsess about what's right and wrong on a daily basis, I can choose to recognize this and create an environment in my own home for me and my family that moves us to live out our Christian faith in action without allowing the rules or perfectionism or fear to be the driving force behind every choice. I'm always struck by the incredible power of our brains. With counseling and medication and mindfulness, we can create new pathways and new realities for ourselves. The brain is such a malleable thing, and OCD is, even when it feels so strong and frightening, actually pretty limited to what we give it. There's hope in that for me. The next subtype of OCD is sexual. Common obsessions within this subtype are unwanted sexual thoughts or images, which can range from the benign to violent in nature, fear of having unwanted sexual thoughts about children, fear that you will become addicted to pornography, sex, or masturbation, and fear of acting sexually aggressively towards others. This is a tough one. There's a ton of shame involved in this subtype for obvious reasons. It's hard for me to even say this now, but sexual obsessions are the ones I've struggled with most. Having grown up in purity culture's heyday, here's looking at you, True Love Waits. My adolescence and young adult years were spent totally immersed in the teaching that not only was sex sinful before marriage, but also the really harmful belief that anything related to my body was inherently sexual and therefore to be avoided. Imagine what this does to a young child who's learning about how their body works for the first time and feeling like anything related to it is wrong somehow. That message gets so internalized and carries over. So with someone who has OCD, it becomes tenfold and that it's also wrapped up not just in a person's moral system, but also in the smallest mistake means there's no coming back. There's no fixing it. So I was constantly on alert for my boyfriend's hands moving too far south. And if we fooled around and went past my boundaries, I would just break down and sob. I had no idea that so much of this was wrapped up in religious and sexual OCD. It got the worst after I have my children and became absolutely terrified of accidentally molesting them while I was changing their diapers, which led to avoidance behavior, rumination, reassurance, always trying to remember the exact placement of my hands every time I change them. This subtype is the one I get the most messages about, usually from new mothers who are now caring for tiny humans and need us to be at our best for them. So we're super hard on ourselves, and we don't understand that these obsessions are really our mind's way of showing us our values and what we care about most, our children. It's, as my counselor says, our greatest need to protect our children flipped on its head, and that it becomes something not only that we're afraid of happening to our children, but something we're now afraid of us doing because we're the ones in charge. We are the ones with this new huge responsibility, and it's a lot for our brains to handle. So, if you're a new mom or a new parent, this is actually really common. Exposure therapy has been absolutely key here for me to overcome these fears. Where once I would have never allowed my husband to leave the house with me and the kids alone, now I spend all my time with them, together, homeschooling, playing, and living life. I couldn't have done it by myself, though, which is why I always reiterate that these things are normal and that there's a whole vast community of people who understand OCD and who have OCD to help us through it when we feel alone. All right, the last major subtype is relational OCD. This is a unique one, I think, in that it really finds its root in this existential and philosophical question that can't really be answered without the experience of actually being in a relationship and seeing what happens. So if you're in a relationship and you're having an obsession about whether or not this person is the one, so to speak, there's only so much of that you can know. You have to experience the relationship, and that takes time. And obsessions don't have time, right? They want to know the answers right now. There's no room for uncertainty. Again, exposure therapy is huge. In order to teach our brains that these questions can sit for a while, we have to be willing to sit with the discomfort of not knowing. It feels like hell. Sometimes I think it is hell. Other ways relational OCD can manifest are in obsessions about whether or not they love their partner enough or are sufficiently attracted to them, or fears about not living up to a partner's expectations, even if that partner seems completely happy in the relationship. This is so time-consuming and irrational, and we know that, right? This constant analysis of the relationship, and it can lead to a lot of self-fulfilling prophecies, where what we fear comes true in some way, because our OCD pushes us to act in ways that push our partner away or inhibit their freedom because of our fear. So, as with every type of OCD, pursuing professional help is crucial for our success here. Not in getting rid of OCD, but in learning to live with it in a healthy way. It's helpful to be honest with our partners and ask them to come along on the journey. My husband really didn't understand my OCD for a long time, even though he was supportive. But as the years have passed and we've experienced so much together, he can recognize the signs of my obsessing now and kind of speak truth to them in that moment. It's not always easy, and I can get super defensive, but he's a wise and thoughtful man, and bringing him alongside me in this has been just as important for my mental health as counseling and medication have been. I hope learning a little bit about these subtypes has been a helpful introduction to you or someone you know who has OCD. So just a really quick general overview. If you want to learn more, I'll post some links, as always, to my favorite OCD resources in the show notes for you to peruse. I also want to let you guys know that this podcast is now hosted by Anchor, which I love, and you can help support the creation of more episodes by clicking on listener support in the show notes and giving whatever you'd like to help me keep this going. If you want to connect with me or suggest content for future episodes, you can send me a message on Instagram or Twitter at Wendy Nunnery. That's WendyNunnery. You can also visit my website at WendyNunnery.com. I would love to hear from you. If you like this episode or want to share your thoughts on the podcast, please make sure that you leave a review so new listeners can find it. Thanks so much for being here today, and I hope you guys have an awesome week.